2008-1078, Titan Tire Corporation and the Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company against Case New Holland and GPX International Tire Corporation. Mr. Herrick.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. May it please the Court. We're here today because the plaintiffs have appealed from an opinion of the District Court in the Southern District of Iowa denying our motion for a preliminary injunction. The case below deals with a design patent case owned by plaintiffs, licensed to one of the plaintiffs, owned by one of the plaintiffs, licensed to the other plaintiff.
You may assume that we've passed the background. Come right to the argument.
Very good.
Mr. Herrick,
yes.
On the denial of a PI, what is the standard review by the Court of Appeals?
Well, I think the standard of review is if there's an error of law, then it's on a de novo basis. If it's an error of fact, then deference has to be given to the
clear error, isn't it?
Yes.
So where did the lower court make a clear error, reversible error? Could you point it out?
Yes.
Specifically?
In its finding of the defendants raising a significant question of obviousness. I think that they made three clear errors in that obviousness finding. The first is that there isn't any clear articulated reasoning of the standard that the district court used to reach its finding of obviousness. The second error is, to the extent that there's any language in the district court's opinion that supports a finding of obviousness, it comes from the KSR case. That was a case that was very recently decided prior to the hearing that we had on the preliminary injunction. Counsel for defendants brought it up. We responded, and I suspect that the court kind of grasped on some of the stray language in that KSR opinion and reproduced it in the district court opinion that we're appealing from. And to the extent that they did so, I think that's error. Those two errors, I think, are errors of law. The other error that the district court made is an error of fact.
Well, is it a question of law? To the part of the KSR case which you pointed out, or one of it, and which certainly catches the eye, is where he says, if it's a predictable variation that could have been implemented by a person of ordinary skill, that's enough. But is that a question of law, or is that in fact a finding in the mind of the court that it could have been implemented, and therefore that's enough?
Yes. Thank you for your question, because I think that delineates the difference that may exist between the defendant's position on this issue and our position on this issue. The question isn't whether the court found that there was a predictable variation that could have been implemented. The issue is that the predictable variation is taken from the KSR case. And in the context of the KSR case, the Supreme Court makes reference to a consideration of functional characteristics of the prior art that references their being combined in order to determine whether or not there's a predictable variation. And that just has no application, makes no sense at all in a design patent case where the protection extends only to the ornamental features and not to any of the functionality. And in fact, if you have primary functionality in a design feature, it can't be the subject of design patent protection. So our position is it makes no sense at all to give credibility to design function or to functional parts of prior art in a design patent obviousness analysis.
So obviousness does not come into play in design patent?
Oh, of course it does, Your Honor. Of course it does. Section 103 applies, Graham v. John Deere applies, all those things apply. It's just that in the context of the decision that's before you, the one we're appealing from, the district court pulled language out of KSR, and when you look at the KSR opinion and the context in which that language was used, the Supreme Court says that part of that analysis, part of the predictable variation analysis, is to give deference, credit, to the functional aspects of the prior art. And that's where I have the difficulty.
Well, isn't the difference really from the prior art that you have an hexagon, there's a pentagon in the prior art?
We don't think so, Your Honor.
You don't think so?
No.
What is the difference?
Well, there are a great many differences.
The knob itself.
Yeah. In addition to being a hexagonal shape, it also has particular, some of the sides are longer than others. It's the direction in which the lug head extends from the lug bar. It's the interlocking and overlapping pattern that's they're formed by the lugs. The court,
but that's functional, isn't it?
No. The function that's attributable to the lug head, the end of the lug bar that is somewhere placed around the equatorial plane of the tire, the surface area of that lug head has function because you have to support the weight of the vehicle on the tire. So the amount of surface area that you have there is functional. The shape is totally ornamental because it doesn't matter what shape it has, so long as it provides that surface area.
Whether it's hexagonal or pentagonal or otherwise.
Exactly. Yes,
so you're saying there's a difference in design.
There's a difference in the ornamental aspect.
And it would not be obvious to make it from a pentagon to an hexagon.
No.
No, impossible. Nobody could even consider that. Is that what you're telling us? The merits of this case are not before us, counsel. What is before us is the question of whether there is a substantial question before the trial judge sufficient to allow the judge to exercise discretion in denying you a preliminary injunction.
Yes, sir.
That's an enormous threshold to get over, and I'm really puzzled. I'll be candid with you.
Sure.
I'm puzzled why you're here. Because, come back to the standard of review. I may have misunderstood the standard of review question, which is the one Judge Gayarsa opened the debate with, or the discussion with. The standard of review is abuse of discretion, isn't it?
And clearly erroneous, isn't it?
With regard to underlying facts.
Yes, yes.
But
and I've asserted that there were two legal errors that were made below.
Factual errors?
No, legal. The first legal error is that there is no articulable standard that was applied by the court.
The question, we don't review opinions. We review judgments. The
yes.
judgment in this case was the trial judge said, I'm not going to grant you a preliminary injunction,
right. Yes.
Because there's a substantial question as to whether this lug head is obvious or not in light of the prior art, and the judge looked at the various designs and the 683 patent, the RAM MaxiTrue, the
BF
Goodrich. So he looked at all of that and he said, you know, I'm puzzled about this. I'm not sure what the right answer is. And he said, there's a substantial question here. No preliminary injunction.
And
the question is that truly an abuse of discretion? Is
yes,
that
sure.
what you're telling us?
Yes. And I would point to authority in the Durling v. Spectrum Furniture case, a case that's relied on by defendants as well as plaintiffs and cited by the district court.
I love cases that can be relied on by all the parties because
okay.
it tells me that the case doesn't control the outcome.
Well, used for perhaps different purposes, because the Durling case is used in this case for two reasons. One is, the first probably is it's...
This is the single reference problem.
Yes, articulation
right.
and, of single
And
reference.
I concede right up front, the trial judge did not say, aha, I have a single reference.
Right.
He did recognize that Durling requires a single reference.
Right.
And he did talk about different references, but he didn't pick one.
Right.
All right? Is that an abuse of discretion?
Yes.
Really?
And again, and I go back to the Durling case, the other part of the Durling case that perhaps defendants don't agree with, which wherein it says that the district courts are required to articulate a reasoned judgment on a design patent obviousness issue so that the parties know what might be challenged, and so that this court, the appellate court, knows what internal reasoning was applied to understand whether it was proper or not. And if there's no sound reason, if there's no support, if there's no comparison between prior art, the defendants in this case threw in 20 odd references, never identified anything as a primary reference, never provided any of the framework of analysis required by the Durling court. They just threw it up against the wall to see what would stick. And the judge...
Can we on the appellate court pick a single reference if we want to?
No, I don't think you could.
We can't.
You can, but I don't think there's one in the evidence in this case. I don't think there's a single reference that meets the Durling requirement that it present ornamental characteristics that are basically the same as those that are protected by the 862 patent in suit.
Okay.
The district court said that he found that the patentee was likely to succeed on the merits after full trial. Was that on the issues of validity as well as infringement?
No, Your Honor. On the issue of infringement, he found that we were likely to succeed. He found that irreparable harm existed and that public policy supported entering the injunction. But he found that defendants had generated a substantial issue of questionability on the obviousness issue.
Of validity.
Invalidity.
Yes, validity. By way of obviousness, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Of applying the KSR standard as the district court repeated it, which, and if in fact that standard applies in design patents, that, then it's very hard to argue with.
Yes, Your Honor, that part of his opinion, the part that deals with invalidity, concludes with that block quote from the KSR case.
The trial judge also dealt with the functionality issue that you were discussing with Judge Giarsi, didn't he?
No.
Okay.
Well, shall we save the rest of your time for rebuttal? We're into rebuttal time, and let's hear from Mr. Grimm.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is William Grimm, and I represent Case New Holland, Inc. The procedural context in which this case comes to you is critically important for the standard you're applying, abuse of discretion, for the parties who are really before you, because the only motion below was against Case New Holland, Inc., not the defendants who were added after the hearing. And finally, because the standard on an appeal from a preliminary injunction, where the burden of proof is different on questions of invalidity. I don't have to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the patent is invalid. I just need to raise a substantial question concerning invalidity below.
Well, we have all sorts of precedent saying what you have to show for a preliminary injunction. If you look at what the Supreme Court has said, they said you apply the same standard in the preliminary injunction phase as you do at trial. Whereas, you're absolutely right, we have said here and there that, no, you don't, you can avoid a preliminary injunction simply by showing that this isn't a Rule 11 defense, you've raised an adequate question.
Understand, I have to show that a substantial question of invalidity exists, and that's what the judge found.
But less than a preponderance, more than a scintilla, but less than a preponderance. Is that how you see the usage?
On the preponderance of the evidence, I need to show a substantial question of invalidity.
No.
Which we did.
What you have to show is not by a preponderance of evidence that it's invalid, but that you've raised a question, again, as substantial question is defined, I think, in the NLRB case, as more than a scintilla, but less than a preponderance.
Understood, Your Honor.
Is that how this judge viewed it?
He dealt with it in terms of whether we had raised a substantial question of invalidity or not. He did not come under the burden of proof in his decision. But we don't even reach that point because the evidence was undisputed that Case New Holland, Inc. had nothing to do with this tire that's been accused of infringing.
Well, that's a separate question in terms of related companies.
But it's a question of what issues are truly before you. And the finding of fact that he made below that Case New Holland Inc. had nothing to do with this tire, and it was its only connection to the tire was that it was the sole member of an LLC which put the tire on a backhoe and sold it, was insufficient to prove active inducement by Case New Holland Inc.
Well, in that case, even if there were a preliminary injunction, if they have nothing to do with this business, they don't have to worry.
Certainly, but there has to be a basis for the issuance of a preliminary injunction. There had to be evidence of active inducement, and the court found, as a matter of fact, that there was no such evidence. And that's not even disputed here. What they are asking you to do is give the court in Iowa an advisory opinion on the obviousness issues, perhaps an advisory opinion on the functionality problems that they have with the validity of this patent. And I respectfully request that you decline to do so.
Well, why do you care? If it doesn't have any effect on your clients, why are you even here and spending their money?
As I've said to the lower court during the course of the argument, I fully expected to represent the true parties in interest, GPX International Tire, and the subsidiary of Case New Holland Inc. when and if they were brought into the case. And in fact, I do represent them below.
They're listed on the official caption, GPX International Tire. You're saying they weren't served? There's no,
well, they've been served, and we've answered the case in Iowa, but there was no motion for a preliminary injunction against filed GPX. Against GPX or filed against CNH America. No motion below was heard as to those parties. They did not participate in the hearing.
Well, just to complicate the matter a little further, I guess I'll nitpick at what it is you're supposed to do before us. That is, you suggested you have to show a substantial issue before the trial judge. I would suggest you don't even have to go that far. All you have to show is that the trial judge did not abuse his discretion in thinking that there was a substantial question raised.
Understood, Your Honor.
Is that different?
I think it is. I need to show you, if we get to the merits of the invalidity issues, that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in finding that significant questions exist on the invalidity issue. So it's slightly different, but I don't think dispositively different.
Okay.
But if Case is the only party in the action and the injunction would not apply against it, what standing would you have to even challenge to defend the denial of the PI?
Well, a motion for an injunction was brought against us, and we have the ability to defend on all bases.
But the PI would not apply to you, would it?
It was only sought against us. What they were trying to do initially was to prove active inducement in some manner.
Which they did not.
Which they did not. All they showed was that we were the single member of the LLC who was actually selling the accused tire.
Is that incorrect?
No, that is correct.
Well, then why are you not a proper party to everything?
If they could prove, that's not enough to prove active inducement under the clear case law of this circuit.
We're at the preliminary injunction phase. All they have to do is show likelihood of success of showing the various issues. You're saying that that this particular client could in no event be charged with anything that's at issue in this case?
I'm saying they offered no evidence below that my client, Case New Holland Inc., actively induced anybody.
Did they try to prove that?
Not that I saw, Your Honor.
Do they think they tried to prove it? I'll ask them that question.
There was no evidence presented on that point whatsoever.
You're making the argument that Judge Gallarza just raised, which is you've got no standing to even be here. I can't figure out what he's up to, and now I can't even figure out why you're here. This is a very strange case.
I'm here by invitation of the court and my brother's appeal. And obviously, we're in the case below for the real parties in interest, which are GPX.
Well, if you're the real party of interest, I don't know why you're squandering your few appellate moments to say you're not a party to this case, and that you don't have to be here, and nothing would apply against you anyway, and that even if some other party is enjoined, your client could continue to sell infringing tires if they're enjoined because the trial judge said more likely than not they'll be found infringing?
Because I don't believe you should reach these issues that they would like you to reach on how KSR impacts obviousness in the design patent context.
But for KSR, they might have a different result.
I'm sorry?
But for KSR, it might have come out differently. The trial judge says, I find they are likely to succeed at full trial, but KSR says it's enough at this stage to show that maybe they won't succeed.
Well, the trial judge did not rely on KSR for his rationale and obviousness. What he said about KSR was that he was aware of the decision, that it might change the landscape on obviousness in design patents. He was familiar with the well-established law that obviousness in terms of utility patents is dealt with in the same manner as with design patents, but he didn't come to any conclusion that KSR did one thing or another concerning the obviousness question in this case.
He says if it could have been done by a person of ordinary skill. That's enough. That comes straight from KSR.
Well, KSR asked the courts below to give a flexible, more flexible approach.
Use common sense.
Obviously.
I think was the phrase.
And to not get bound into certain structural tests. And KSR could ultimately change the test that people use on design patent obviousness questions.
Well, from the pictures in the district court's opinion, the accused product and the picture in the design patent, you can't tell them apart. So from that viewpoint, that makes it pretty easy. You don't have to worry about equivalency of design. And also, when you look at all of the pictures of the prior art, if we're talking about pictures, none are exactly the same. If the old law of design patents prevailed, we might have a much simpler case. But the trial judge was obviously taken with what the Supreme Court seems to have been trying to do in KSR, shall we say, tighten some of the standards, more in the direction, as Judge Plager says, of common sense, as the Patent Office argued to the Supreme Court that the Federal Circuit is removing common sense from these,
yes,
from these judgments.
Yes,
and so here we are now with common sense. The accused product looks, I looked at it carefully, I was going to say to my eye, I'm not used to evaluating tire treads, but I can't see a difference between them.
Yes, I agree, Your Honor, that the substantial question, as the trial judge found, when this case is ultimately tried, will be on the invalidity issues. Whether this patent is invalid because it's obvious, which we believe it is, they're just changing one geometric shape for another.
Because it could have been done by a skilled designer, which is what
absolutely
the KSR said.
All they,
now,
all
whether
they
design
was,
patents
I'm
are
sorry.
Subject to that law is something that maybe we'll even know after this case is over. But to understand where we are at this stage of the preliminary injunction stage, I really do need to have a clearer view of your position. First, you tell us you shouldn't be there, then only some of your clients shouldn't be there, but that they are nonetheless selling a product which looks exactly like the one in the design patent.
When this case is tried on the merits, the primary defense will be that the patent is primarily functional, not ornamental, and that's going to be based on the admissions in affidavits that the plaintiff submitted in connection with this case, in this particular motion, and it's also going to be based on invalidity as a result of obviousness. And we're going to ask the court below to take a practical approach, a common sense approach to obviousness, and find, ultimately on the merits, that this patent, which all it does is change a five-sided lug head to a six-sided lug head, would be obvious to any person skilled in the art. In fact, it would be obvious to any person skilled in basic geometry.
And I take it your position before us today is that both of those issues, invalidity issues, constitute no abuse of discretion on the part of the trial judge in thinking those are substantial issues sufficient to deny the injunction. Is that your position?
The trial got one of them right, one of them wrong, Your Honor. He did find there was a substantial question concerning validity based on obviousness.
But he didn't.
But he did not agree with our analysis that the admissions made by the plaintiff concerning the functional aspects of the entirety of the design, except for the hexagonal shape of the lug head, was sufficient to raise that question. He made a clear error of law there when he just focused the functionality analysis on one aspect of the design.
We don't need to reach that, however, if we agree there is a substantial question on the obviousness side. Is that correct?
You don't need to reach that issue. I would submit you don't even need to reach the issue of substantial question on obviousness because there is no evidence in the record that Case New Holland Inc. actively induced. So the only
which
issue
means you have no standing. Do you really want to push us into that hole, counsel?
It's not a hole. All that
That's
I'm
a very deep hole. If
all
you're
that
not
I'm requesting,
I can't hear a word you're saying.
But all I'm requesting is that you affirm the denial of the preliminary injunction request
on
that was
whatever
made
ground
against
on which ground?
Case New Holland.
On any grounds
on
we can think
ground?
Of. Is that your point?
On the grounds that there is no evidence that Case New Holland actively induced, and the judge made a correct finding on that, which was not clearly erroneous and not an abuse of discretion. And secondly, the judge made a correct finding that there was a substantial question of invalidity arising out of the obviousness evidence that was presented beforehand.
Well, that's what you argued on the KSR issue before the judge.
Yes,
you did argue the KSR case before the judge.
We did, and he agreed with our analysis that there was evidence supporting a substantial question of invalidity on the basis of obviousness.
So basically you're saying that that's the element that we can affirm or reverse on as to whether or not he was correct on determining a question of validity on the issue of obviousness.
I'm saying you can affirm on a number of bases. One, he was correct that there was no active inducement or any evidence of that as to Case New Holland. Secondly, he was correct that there was a substantial question of invalidity raised on the issue of obviousness. And I believe there's a third ground that you could use if you decided either of those were not good enough, and that is that this patent, this design patent, is primarily functional based on the admissions in the affidavit that the plaintiff filed in support of the motion for a preliminary injunction, in which their own engineer described the functional aspects of every aspect of this tire design except for this one aspect, the hexagonal.
That's a question of fact, though, isn't it? We can't decide that.
Well, it's undisputed fact. It's an affidavit of record. The admissions are there. It's the Junkins affidavit. She describes in detail all the functional aspects of the various elements of the design and says that the only ornamental feature of the design is this hexagonal lug head. All the other aspects of the design are
functional.
And the judge made a mistake on that because he focused just on the lug head and not on the entirety of the design in determining the functionality issue. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Grimm. Mr. Herrick.
Thank you. Just a few brief points. One is to Judge Plager's issue of the review of a denial of preliminary injunction and the standard that's applied. I would agree that it is based on abuse of discretion. But if in reaching that decision, the judge makes an error of law, then your review of that is de novo.
We're both right then, aren't we?
I'm sorry?
We're both right then, aren't we?
Okay. That's right. I would like to take issue with Mr. Grimm's characterization of the Judkins affidavit. She does say that the shape of the lug head is purely ornamental, but she makes no reference at all to the other point of novelty and ornamentality that was found by the court, which is the arrangement or placement of the lugs around the tire. Her affidavit is silent on that, and the court found a factual finding that that was one of the points of novelty of the tire and also one of the ornamental design aspects of the tire. Finally, on functionality and the issue that Judge Plager brought up with regard to, you know, a pentagonal lug head being changed into a hexagonal lug head, the district court relied quite a bit on the PHG Technologies case and, in fact, quoted directly from it, saying, when there are several ways to achieve the function of an article of manufacture, the design of the article is more likely to serve a primarily ornamental purpose. And I would remind the court again that the defendants put in 20-odd references of tires that they claim teach various combinations of the design aspects that somehow need to be combined together by somebody in order to make obvious the plaintiff's design patent. All of those tires are functional. They're all out being sold or had been sold at some point in time out in the world. And they all have lugs and lug heads and designments of arrangements of lugs around the tire. And so under the PHG test, the fact that there are so many of these out there militates against making an argument that somehow a pentagonal lug head can make obvious a hexagonal lug head. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Herrick. The case is taken under submission.